Good afternoon and welcome to Saturday with Cormac O'Hara. Today, the resumption of childcare and the reopening of schools. How will it work in practice? We discuss a call from the INMO for an inquiry into what they say is a high level of healthcare workers infected with COVID-19. Reduce social distancing to 1 metre. We examine calls from a number of sectors. And is a deal in sight in government formation talks? That and more, but first the news, read by Susan Jackson.
Thanks, Cormac, and good afternoon from the newsroom. First, the headlines. In the US city of Detroit, a 19-year-old man has been shot dead during protests against the death of an African-American man in police custody. The health service executive has recorded a significant drop in the number of patients in intensive care units, and the private company SpaceX will make another attempt today to launch 2 US astronauts into space. Community leaders in the United States have appealed for calm after further violent demonstrations in protest at the killing by police of an unarmed African-American man, George Floyd, in Minneapolis. A police officer has been sacked and charged with murder. Protesters are calling for the arrest of 3 other officers who were at the scene. The mayor of Minneapolis, Jacob Frey, pleaded for the violence to stop.
If you care about your community, you got to put this to an end. It needs to stop. You're not getting back at the police officer that tragically killed George Floyd by looting a town.
Demonstrators clashed with police in cities including New York, Los Angeles and Washington. In Detroit, a 19-year-old man was killed when shots were fired from a passing vehicle into a crowd of demonstrators. Lucy Sheriff is a local journalist in Los Angeles.
The protests have got increasingly violent as the day has gone on. There have been a couple of quite big fires that the police have now extinguished, and there have been quite a few jewellery stores broken into in the jewellery district, and actually witnessed 2 people getting arrested. And the police have also arrested quite a few other protesters.
The latest operational figures from the health service executive show that as of last night, there were 42 people with confirmed COVID-19 being treated in intensive care units around the country. That's a significant drop from the high of 160 patients in ICU in early April. 2/3 of these COVID-19 patients are being cared for in ICUs in Dublin hospitals. Health authorities are encouraging people to keep a record of those they meet this weekend to help with contact tracing during the coronavirus pandemic if necessary. The Chief Medical Officer, Dr. Tony Houlihan, said it would be next week before health authorities would be able to assess fully the impact that the easing of restrictions was having. It's been confirmed that the EU Commissioner for Trade, Phil Hogan, is exploring the idea of applying to be the Director General of the World Trade Organization. Mr. Hogan, who was previously Agriculture Commissioner, was appointed to the trade brief last year. The existing WTO Director General is due to step down in September. Mr. Hogan's name, sources in Brussels say, is being mentioned as a possible replacement by some EU governments. The US President Donald Trump has said he's severing ties with the World Health Organization. The Minister for Health in Germany, Jens Spahn, described Mr. Trump's decision as disappointing and a setback for global health. The chairman of the US Senate Health Committee, Lamar Alexander, a Republican, warned that Mr. Trump's decision could interfere with clinical trials to develop a vaccine against COVID-19. Last month, Mr. Trump suspended funding to the organization, accusing it of being too lenient with China.
We have detailed the reforms that it must make and engage with them directly, but they have refused to act. Because they have failed to make the requested and greatly needed reforms, we will be today terminating our relationship with the World Health Organization and redirecting those funds to other worldwide and deserving urgent global public health needs. The world needs answers from China on the virus. We must have transparency.
The private company SpaceX will make another attempt today to launch 2 US astronauts into space. The first launch was called off on Wednesday because of bad weather at Cape Canaveral in Florida. The flight, funded by Elon Musk, will be the first from US soil since 2011.
RTE Radio 1 weather with Centra. Get fired up for the summer with our delicious Inspired by Central barbecue range.
It'll be dry and generally sunny today with highest temperatures ranging from 22 to 26 degrees. And that's all from the newsroom for the moment. Back to you, Cormac.
Thank you very much indeed, Susan Jackson. 51551 if you wanted to get in contact with the programme today. A clamour of voices from different sectors calling for the 2 metre social distancing rule to be reduced to 1 metre. We'll discuss that and education, schools returning in September or late August and childcare and so on with our panel in a little while. But first, let me introduce you to the panel. Thomas Byrne of Fianna Fáil, TD for Meath East and Education Spokesperson. Louise O'Reilly is a Sinn Féin TD for Dublin Fine Gael and Spokesperson on Health. Kieran O'Donnell is a Fine Gael TD for Limerick City. And I'm joined as well by Phil Nihay, who's General Secretary of the Irish Nurses and Midwives Organisation. We'll have other voices as we go. I'll turn to you, first of all, Phil Nihay, because the INMO is calling for a rapid independent inquiry into the high level of healthcare workers, your description, infected with COVID-19. Now, I can tell our listeners that previous figures released to the INMO in April show that 35% of infected healthcare workers are nurses, and that's the largest single group of healthcare workers. And as of the 26th of May, 1 in 3 COVID cases in Ireland our healthcare workers. Now, Phil Nihay, I suppose I've outlined it a little bit, but why are you calling for an independent inquiry?
Because we need more information. In order to protect nurses and other healthcare workers who are going to work, we need information to see why is this figure growing. In general terms, the figure of infection rates is decreasing, but in the healthcare population, the healthcare worker population, it's increasing. It's increasing by over 12% a week. So we need to know why that's happening. And the only way we'll get to know that is if we get the correct information that we have sought, and we understand the HSE are collecting it. They're just not making it known publicly.
Have you asked for it?
And that is an issue of itself. Yes, we've asked for it 3 times in writing. We have some information. They have given us some information, but not the whole information that we need to determine. Are our safety measures correct? Are they working? And can we do more to protect our staff? Because this is phase one of the COVID-19 pandemic. Nurses, midwives, other healthcare workers are going to work. They're getting sick. We need to know what more can we do to ensure that that doesn't continue, that it stops. It's responsible.
And why do you think, and the line is, I hope, will hold. Can you hear me, Phil? We'll try to re-establish the line, but they're calling for an independent inquiry. Thomas Byrne, it seems like a simple one. They want information. Should an inquiry be held?
Well, when I first saw the term independent inquiry, I had visions of one of these commissions of inquiry that would last for months and months and months. But listening to Phil just there now, in terms of they're looking, effectively immediately looking for information as to what's happening and the full data, and what she's saying in terms of what their figures are, certainly anecdotally, my other half is a nurse who has been on the COVID front line, is certainly what she's been hearing as well. You know, when we're hearing the numbers go down every day, There is a slightly different picture in the health sector. That I think that's well acknowledged.
So would you support calls for an inquiry? We have a third of infections are healthcare.
Well, I support calls for what Phil has just been asking for there, which is for transparency, for finding out what more can we do, to finding out what best we can do now to protect healthcare workers who are at the front line and who need protection.
She's calling for information. She said she's written 3 times looking for it. What she's calling for today is an independent inquiry. Do you support that specifically?
Well, I support her getting, and her members and her organisation getting the information, and I support doing absolutely everything possible now, today, tomorrow, Monday, Tuesday, to make sure that our healthcare workers are protected as best as possible.
Sorry,
there's no obfuscation. If you're talking about an independent inquiry that's going to take place when we get terms of reference done in months and months and months, and then it takes a year, I don't think that would be of any benefit today.
I'll come to you, Louise, in just a second, but we have Phil Nihay back on the line.
We also think every aspect of this needs to be obviously reviewed.
Let's clarify. What are you calling for? Because it's a no if it's a long, drawn-out inquiry from Thomas Byrne.
For the reasons I outlined.
Phil Nihay, yeah.
Looking for a long, drawn-out inquiry. We're looking for the statistics that are already gathered to be published. We're looking for the areas of contact. Where is the contact of healthcare workers happening? Is it happening in specific locations? And if so, that tells us something. Is the contact at work? the details of the service area. Was the healthcare worker engaged in a specific procedure wearing PPE when the infection occurred? Was the patient confirmed COVID positive at the time of contact with the healthcare worker? Was PPE available and worn at the time of contact? And the current numbers who have been derogated, although positive, but asymptomatic, to come back to work. How many clusters developed as a result of that managerial decision? Those are real questions. They will help in determining if the policies that the HSE have put in place are actually causing an increase to the infection rate.
In fairness to the HSE and the department, have been working to access PPE from the very start. It was very difficult, in a difficult situation at the start, and PPE wasn't readily available in the amounts they wanted. I wonder, did that impact the figures in Ireland of infections?
Exactly, but we know now that PPE is available. Our members tell us, yes, there is far more availability of PPE, but the infection rate is increasing at 12% a week. Last week it increased by 12%. So we need to know why. If the PPE is correct, if it's being used in the right situations, there should be no growth in infection of the healthcare workers.
Okay, so
there's a number of questions. The main one being, should we be wearing PPE in all locations?
Let me open this up to the panel. Louise O'Reilly, that is a conundrum, isn't it? The increase in infections among healthcare workers by 12% per week, even though we have PPE.
It's very worrying. And I don't think the request from the INMO for a rapid independent inquiry is an outrageous one. I think it's very necessary. So we are at the moment, as Phil has pointed out, we're in a phase. We may have a second wave. We need to make sure that we have those questions answered, that we get to the root of this issue. So let's not forget, PPE was a global challenge. You know, the HSE and the Department of Health were telling us PPE was a global challenge. So every country was facing the same difficulties that we were facing. And yet we have infection rates that are, as you say, one in three of those infected are healthcare workers.
So you're calling for an inquiry,
very
though.
Much higher.
You support those calls, but how do you stop what Thomas Byrne outlines, that you must have legal representation?
You do that by making sure that the terms of reference are robust. So what the INMO are looking for in the first instance is information, and that should be supplied.
Okay.
It should be supplied to all of the trade unions. There shouldn't be a request gone in three times for basic information.
Well,
that should be supplied immediately.
I'll come back to you, Thomas
Byrne.
What
Phil is talking about is about protecting frontline healthcare workers, making sure that we are ready if we have a second wave. And I think if there's learnings that can be got and a rapid inquiry is what's needed, well, then that should happen. But we need to make sure the terms of reference are robust, and we need to ensure that it gets the answers in a timely manner, so that nurses, doctors, other healthcare workers who are on the front line, who are putting themselves in harm's way to keep us safe, so that they have the assurance that this is not going to happen
again. Okay, so let me get a quick response from the government representative here, is Kieran O'Donnell of Fine Gael. What do you say to the INMO, Kieran?
I say that we acknowledge the fantastic work they do along with many other healthcare workers. I appreciate the fact that they are more exposed, that they can stay at home. They deserve our full support, and government is very much committed in that area.
In relation to the inquiry, I mean.
Can I just preface it by saying that I understand that Minister Harris is meeting with Finlay Hay and her colleagues on Tuesday. And I would have thought that if we have an obvious route to have the type of review that is needed that Phil is calling for through the COVID committee that's already up and running, mm-hmm. and that could get to the facts. And certainly Phil and her members are entitled to know exactly what the position is. But
why have they not received the information they're looking for despite writing for it three times?
I'm not aware of that. That's the first I've heard of that. But
does
I think
it surprise
these,
you?
Well, it does, yeah. But I think these are matters that obviously Phil will be discussing with Minister Harris on Tuesday. But I would have thought that even as an immediate measure, the COVID committee could take this particular issue up as well, because they're looking at a range of areas around COVID and what's happening with the pandemic on an ongoing basis.
Okay. Yeah, I just want to be very clear. I mean, what Finlay Hay is asking for there is entirely reasonable and correct, but it doesn't involve... The COVID committee is an obvious place to go at some point, but I think with people's lives and health are at risk today, tomorrow, Monday, Tuesday, this needs urgent information to be given from the department in terms of clusters. And I have to say, I would have assumed that our experts, our National Emergency Committee, is looking at this, and I would like them to, you know, engage with the nurses' union as well.
So are you basically calling on NPHET or the department or the HSE to make these stats available?
Oh, I am. I think we need information on this, but we also need a solution to this as to why it's happening. I think, you know, the fact that the PPE was clearly an issue a few weeks ago, it's not as much of an issue now, and we're still getting high rates of infection. This is very, very serious, but this isn't something that we can just throw into the political sphere, we can just throw into the judicial sphere. Nurses and other healthcare workers need information and answers very, very quickly.
They're not talking about the political or the judicial sphere. What they're saying is they're looking for a rapid, independent inquiry that will get to the root of why this is happening. If we don't understand why it's happening, then we're not going to be in a position to prevent it happening again. So I do back the call of the INMO for that rapid inquiry. But in the meantime, there is absolutely no excuse for that information not being provided. So they have the information. We know that information is collected in relation to clusters and in relation to the breakdown of staff. That should be shared with the people who are representing
and
those staff.
Everybody agrees
on
that.
Very simple thing.
Can I ask, Phil, two very brief questions before I let you go? It's a big call in the middle of a situation like this to call for an inquiry. What responses did you get to your three letters that prompted you to call for an inquiry instead of going to the COVID committee or instead of waiting for your meeting on Tuesday?
Well, first of all, the ask is for somebody to look at the information that we understand is already collected. That's the point. So we have a lot of academics, both in nursing and in medicine, epidemiologists who could look at this. We're not looking for a big commission of inquiry. We're looking for a rapid assessment as to why it's happening and with the data that's already gathered then being used to implement preventative measures. The whole point is we do not want our members going to work, nurses or any other healthcare worker, in fear of getting the infection. Okay. Because we have to try and minimise that as far as possible. PPE is the guard between the infection and not getting the infection. It has to be. Worldwide it is. Other countries worldwide, their infection rates amongst their healthcare staff are much lower, even where the manifestations of the virus were very, very high and very virulent. So I think the point is, we're obviously not providing PPE in enough areas. That's what we think the answer is.
Okay.
But we can't say that for definite because we don't have the statistics.
Okay.
If I could make one comment to the representative of government who's there. And I thank the comments, and I appreciate the comments about how well our members are doing and the great work nurses are doing. But in their manifesto for government, they said they would finish the job of pay parity for nurses. Now, I'm asking that they do that, because we are very grateful for all the thanks, but we need action in respect of the outstanding issues that came out of the strike, when nurses had to go on strike to force the government to think about the inequalities in their pay.
So let Kieran respond to that.
I think that's very important.
So the message, Kieran, is thanks for the respect, but please give us pay parity.
That's recognised, but obviously we're now in the subject of discussions in terms of forming a new government. I presume everything will be discussed at that point. Can I just make one very quick point, Phil? What Phil wants is for her members is to know exactly what's happening now in real time. Clearly, the meeting with the minister next Tuesday, I hope, will bring full clarity to that. And if there is a need for further work, I think the COVID committee is clearly the place to look at it. But I think what I'm getting from Phil here on behalf of members, she wants this to happen now in real time. We don't want anything that's long drawn out. We want an immediate measure. And
in terms of pay parity, I think this is something that's been agreed for some time. And what about Michael Lee Higgins' call in the Late Late Show last night in terms of generally essential workers? He says we need to follow through and look at how they're remunerated, their security and the conditions they're asked to work in.
And I fully accept that. But obviously, I'm not privy to what discussions are ongoing in terms of a new government formation. But on a personal level, I absolutely agree with Phil. But obviously, these are matters that are now the subject of discussion between the parties that are looking to form a government.
Okay, Kieran O'Donnell of Fine Gael, thanks. Stay with us, obviously. Phil Nihay, I'm going to let you go. General Secretary of the Irish Nurses and Midwives Organisation, thank you very much indeed for that. Let's broaden the discussion a little bit, because education is a huge issue, and when schools and how schools would reopen. Childcare is another one as well, but also the calls from various sectors across the economy to reduce this 2 2 metre social distancing rule to 1 metre. IBEC called for it last night. I said earlier on with Brendan O'Connor, Louise, that the language they use is very measured. They're not looking for something outrageous here, they would claim. They're looking for something that's safe and measured. Do you support the 1 metre call?
Well, I think what we have to do is be guided at all times by public health advice. Of course we do. But we also need to look at what is practical. So the leaks from the cabinet, one of the most recent cabinet meetings, the leaks in relation to whether or not there was going to be a reduction from 2 metres to 1 metre, that sent businesses and teachers and every person who's trying to prepare to get back to some sort of normal, that sent them into a tailspin. And now they don't know. So they don't know if they're planning for 1 metre or 2 metre social distancing. They don't know what way this is going to operate. So I suppose
a lot of Fianna Fáil are calling for 1 metre.
I understand that. And what Sinn Féin is saying is we have to be guided by the public health advice, but we also have to be guided by what's practical, and we need to give businesses certainty now.
They're also saying in IBEC to lift the quarantine for people coming into the country.
Just as hang on, there's no compulsory quarantine at the moment in any event. It's only recommended. It's not the law. It's not a rule. It is recommended. But I do think also that there are countries where they have a very low or not rate. There are countries where it is very, very high, and we need to look at that. We need to look at what is safe. We want to restart the tourism and hospitality sector. We have to. They are large employers. We know that. People want that to restart. Yeah. People are waiting, but they need that certainty. I was talking to business people in my own area, and they were telling me that the difference between 1 metre and 2 metres is the difference between viability and not reopening. Mm-hmm. So they need that clarity. People want to reopen. We want to get the economy restarted, but we want to do so in a way that we know that it is safe.
Can I ask Kieran O'Donnell if he's a Tadhg an dá thaobh here? Because some politicians are talking 2 metres publicly, but privately they're lobbying for the 1 metre. What do you support, Kieran?
I support to get businesses reopen as quickly as possible, subject to public health guidance. And I think Taoiseach made a comment that I would reflect what everyone feels. The vast majority of people, including the government, would like to see us to accelerate the plan to reopen the country. Now, we must do it. We've had a system that we've brought in which the public trust in terms of containing the virus. We must maintain that trust in that system. We had the first phase of reopening on the 18th of May. We really will probably only see the empirical evidence that the virus has been contained, it is not spreading, and has reduced, which we're seeing the evidence in recent days has been very positive. And come the next Friday, which is the 5th of June, that there will be a relook to see how the virus is doing, and then we can move to the next phase.
Are we too slow in this country, Thomas Byrne? That's the question. That's the question that IBEC is pointing to. Yeah. He says most other countries are stepping down the restrictions at a much faster pace than we are.
Well, you know, I mean, we can, and I have huge sympathy for all the businesses out there, and I certainly wonder, as a non-scientist, why we're saying 2 metres and the WHO says something different. They're not quite saying 1 metre, but they're not saying 2 metres either. They're saying really at least 1 metre. But we do have to listen as well to Finlay Hay. I say my own wife's on the COVID front line as well. You know, if healthcare workers' rates are increasing and somebody then goes out into the community and spreads, then we start the whole ball rolling again. So there is certainly a reason to be cautious and not to rush into it. However, there has to be at some point a change. I've no doubt about that. That will come at some point. Look, with the Taoiseach has already committed to opening schools at the end of August and early September. I welcome that. But very, very clearly, that's not going to happen if the 2 metres is there. So I expect the 2 metres will have changed.
Well, it may happen. Let's turn to education, because that's your area. And that's a big conundrum. I suppose they're going to publish, they say, this roadmap to reopening schools by the end of August, in the next fortnight or so. Now, it's either using the class and the teacher as a one unit or one pod to see if that could work. And if that doesn't work, then not all children, is that right, can come back for a whole day.
We're not entirely clear, but what I'm clear about is that it is crucially important that we get our children back to school as quickly as possible. And I certainly was comforted by what the Taoiseach said in terms of bringing them back in September. I think that we have the time now before the end of June to get whatever plans in place that are necessary to be in place, because the reality is that our children are losing out absolutely massively at the moment with possibly long-term effects. We don't know, but we've seen other examples in recent history where there have been long-term effects from children missing missing education for long periods of time and worried about children's socialisation, psychological effects as well. So it's critical that we work might and main now for the next few weeks to make sure that there is a proper plan in place to make sure our schools open. Because if we don't have that determination, we will very easily find a reason for it not to happen. We have to be guided by public health advice. We have to make sure...
Look, children want to know. This is your area, education.
Yeah, I've been very clear.
You could be the Minister for Education.
I've been very clear with Fianna Fáil. Fianna Fáil wants children back at school.
Is it possible, though, to do it safely?
Oh, I think it is possible to do it safely. And now
By the end of August?
Oh, I think so, yeah. I don't think the government would have put it in the roadmap if it wasn't possible.
Why in the name of God, then, was it not possible to hold the Leaving Cert for 20% of the students?
Well, because the plans weren't in place. But as well as that now, on the Leaving Cert, the public health advice was to the department, don't forget that they couldn't do it. But second, we're now more than 2 months absent from school. So you had the absence of learning, which was no one's fault, but just there was a massive absence of learning, massive absence of continuity. And what the National Legal Education Psychological Service set out, the psychological difficulties that children were having being absent from school. So that's been set out on record.
So you think by late August, by your recommendation, by your analysis and reading, that it's possible to have all students back for all days?
What I'm saying is that it's possible to have schools open. It may have to be on a phase basis, but we want to make sure that phase basis is put in place now. And what we have to be careful about, Cormac, as well, you know, we've all praised teachers for online learning and students for online learning. The reality is that online learning has been an emergency response that hasn't been planned in any way whatsoever, and we're not of the races in relation to online learning.
It shouldn't be the norm.
It should not be the norm in the sense that we have not got the systems built up or the training developed or the infrastructure there to allow it to happen.
But isn't that the danger, Kieran O'Donnell, that if they can't get this one class and one teacher equals one pod, that could allow all students back for all days, if that would work. But if they don't get that to work, remote learning or blended learning is certainly on the cards, is it not?
Well, it's included in the roadmap, as Thomas has said, that for to be opened in August, late August. We're committed to doing that. There's currently a roadmap for reopening being prepared, which will be brought to Cabinet by the Minister for Education in 2 weeks' time. I think that a very useful document is the document that was produced for the reopening of creches, the guidance document. It was approved and prepared by Professor Cormacan. That, to me, is a model in terms of reopening the schools as well. We need to get the schools back. We're committed to getting them back. And there's no reason why... with careful planning, and obviously we have to...
Well, there is a reason, according to Paul, by text. He says the Department of Education has created the biggest class sizes in Europe with 28 plus kids in many classrooms. It's coming back to bite them now, he says.
Well, I mean, that's a reasonable point, but I think, you know, we still have to deal with the situation as presents now. And I think with careful planning, and we're now, like, we're looking at another... four phases of the reopening. By the time we get to the schools, I believe there will be a safe mechanism in place to ensure that the schools can reopen as fast as possible. And that's the key. And we get all students back, because
Eoin O'Riordan
has said education.
Eoin O'Riordan, the Labour TD and education spokesperson, says government has not committed to any increased education budget to enable schools reopening. There's a need for extra staff and resources, and that's inevitably, says, principals are already worried about students not returning in September. Will Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael commit to more funding, he says? Give me a yes or no, Kieran and Thomas.
Well, Thomas is obviously privy to the discussions. For me, on a personal level, there are discussions ongoing with the schools at the moment in terms of the road reopening. And I would expect and hope that the necessary funds will be put in place to ensure the schools can reopen in August, late August.
I think the line from the discussions yesterday, Thomas Byrne, was no more funding, no more extra funding.
There's no line from discussions, because we don't discuss the government talks at any point. So I'm not giving you a line on any discussions.
So will there be extra funding?
No one did. All I can say is, very clearly we see what the World Health Organization has set out in its document published only a few weeks ago on the whole issue of schools, that there are resource issues, there are items that will need to be spent on to make sure schools are ready to open, and that's going to have to happen. That would be inevitable. But I think the Department of Education is probably at an early stage. It should be maybe much further on in terms of reopening schools, but they do have the time now. We have 3 months before it happens. I think the next few weeks are absolutely critical in that, and I would expect to reevaluate.
But if they need to hire more teachers, or if they need even PPE or masks or whatever, special
equipment,
they
may have to do
that.
But
have to know if they need extra funding.
I just don't. My impression position of the department at the moment is I'm not clear that they've come to the conclusions on what exactly is required, but I sincerely hope that they will in the next week or so.
Well, if they're worried about how will they fund the extra expense, can you tell them? Can you throw them any line of solace from the talks at all? Don't worry, that'll be covered.
There's no line from the talks. I think we've a pretty clear agreement that we're not going to discuss the talks, and I think that's a reasonable thing to do.
However, so worry
you can,
on,
however, schools. However, you can be absolutely clear that those of us involved in government talks are very conscious of what the needs of schools would be in September to reopen, because we're very conscious, and as I'm sure every politician is, conscious of the needs of children. And I think what I have said is, and consistently, is we want to see the schools open, because we think if there's any deviation from that or any ifs or buts, and there are, you know, maybe a minor in terms of phasing, we accept for phasing, but any other ifs or buts, other than health advice and phasing, then we'll find some other reason not to do it. And we go into the winter period there. It's fine at the moment, kids are playing in the hot weather and, you know, they can get outside. But if they're stuck inside on rainy or snowy days or windy days in October, November, I think that would be an absolute societal disaster, and we can't allow that to happen. So we have a few weeks now to make sure that we do right by our kids by September.
I'm going to go to a break. I'll read Philip's text first of all, and then I'll talk to Niall Muldoon, who's a children's ombudsman. He says, Cormac, prepare for a massive second wave. Ibec and co. don't give a damn as long as the tills ring. My son got this disease in the hospital he works in. Business leaders are not health experts. We need PPE. Says Philip, I'm sure Ibec and co would reject that, but that's your point of view, and I'm sure others may or may not, I don't know, agree with you, Philip. Anyway, I'm going to talk to Niall Muldoon. He's the Ombudsman for Children in just one second.
Saturday with Cormac O'Hara on RTE Radio 1.
And 51551 is the text number. I'm joined, as I say, by Niall Muldoon, who's the Ombudsman for Children. You're very welcome, Niall, to the programme. You were listening to the politicians and the discussion about reopening schools, and you read and heard with interest the plan to reopen some of the creches and childcare facilities last night. But there is a danger that not all students might be able to return every day for a full day. Is that a concern of yours?
Yeah, I mean, I think I'm delighted to hear the enthusiasm for coming back in September or late August. I think that's the way it should be. But the concept of some students coming back and some not, that would be very an anathema to children's rights. I think we already know that there's children with special needs, children with inappropriate digital access, who are already disadvantaged. And I heard Deputy Byrne talking about the online learning not necessarily becoming a norm, because we haven't facilitated it, we haven't paid for it, we haven't rolled it out properly. So I would be worried that children with special needs may not come in often enough over the next period of time after August, but that would be a discrimination that just couldn't be allowed. I think they probably need to be looked at coming in earlier. And I'm very
you go so far as to use that word discrimination, even with restrictions and the difficulty presented by the pandemic and the virus at the moment.
Of course, I mean, the restrictions are there, but I think when you look at how do you ensure equality across the board, you've got to try and make sure that everybody is treated equally. But I think the impact of the COVID-19 on children with special education needs has been twice as big as it has been for other people.
You know, they're trying to work out a system that keeps everyone safe if schools come back, and in creche facilities and so on. And if they can't do it safely in the facility or the setting they have, they may look at blended learning. Now, I know you've touched on it there, but is that a runner from your point of view, or will it discriminate, to use your own words against some students?
I think, again, the key thing here is that they plan for it and they consider it, but that you cannot have the assumption that everybody can do blended learning in the same way. I mean, even things like July provision, which is a statutory obligation for children with special education needs, you cannot do that online. A child with autism, a child with ADHD, a child with other issues won't be able to sit down and look at a video screen in the same way as a child without those issues. Mm-hmm. So it, as long as it's considered and brought into the thought pattern for the Department of Education, which I'm sure it is, we need to make sure those children are as equally thought out for the pathway to return as any other child, and it's not one size fits all in that regard.
Yeah. Let me read a text from Sinead in Dublin 15 to you, Niall. She says, any word on July or summer provision for special needs children? Are their needs going to be met this summer? There's a huge danger that their regression, both socially and educationally, could be irreparably damaged, she says. Now, I know you've written to the Taoiseach specifically about this in the last... When exactly?
The middle of May, so about 2 weeks ago now. I was very, very concerned. I would have been aware of it, and many parents came and got in touch with me. I suppose you've got to think, if a child is at home who's been used to going to a routine of school, getting a special needs assistant in school, being able to have a routine, have socialisation, have learning, the regression that can happen when the parents are at home trying to look after them, maybe with two or three other siblings, and also trying to work from home and produce the good quality of work for their own business, that's going to make a huge impact on the child with the special needs. So we've seen children with toileting issues regressing in toileting, regressing in learning, regressing in their behaviour. So if they're challenged with behaviour, they may start hitting out or biting. It could impact the other siblings in the house. It can just cause havoc across the way. So again, the idea of summer activity for children now, so you're not waiting until September.
And there's no respite, of course.
There's no respite, which again adds to it, adds hugely to that situation. So there's many parents across the country, probably tens of thousands of parents with those sort of children who are really at their wits' end. They've already stayed out the equivalent of a summer holiday, and now they need to find some way to bring it into the school setting.
In fairness to the government, I know they're working on it, but the plan hasn't been announced as of it. Did you get a response from the Taoiseach to your letter?
Not as yet, no. But I mean, I am due to meet with the Department of Education next week, so hopefully I'll get some information at that stage. But I think even if the roadmap itself in 2 weeks' time includes the summer activities and the July provision, that'll be very, very crucial, and it'll be hugely important that those children are considered in that regard.
Yeah, you probably saw the tweet from Minister Simon Harris in a video posted online that his department was liaising with Minister Joe McHugh about establishing a summer programme for children with special needs to ensure that they're being facilitated, and they hope to have a plan within the next couple of days or so. Would that be like, would you endorse or commend some kind of a summer camp?
Listen, as far as I'm concerned, I think the children can have, if there's an education element to it, that's great. But if there's also a social and a physical activity, that's just as important in these days, because they have missed out so much. And it's the interaction with each other and with teachers and with other children, which will really make an enormous difference to these young people and to their families as well, and their siblings, and give them the opportunity to reintegrate back into school, so that if September comes along, I mean, if you think about it, September comes along, they could be 6 months out, and for a child with learning difficulty or intellectual disability or autism, the return to school is like starting from scratch again, and it really could be very, very difficult for them. So any summer activity like that, and I would encourage them, if they want to have sporting organisations involved, be imaginative around this. You know, this could be done in large community halls, it could be done in large PE
halls.
Yeah,
but who'd staff it, I wonder now?
Again, imagination. I mean, the letter I sent would have been sent to HSE in Tusla as well, so you could find ways to do that. There's 15,000 special needs assistants who have been reassigned. There could be other ways of doing that. Again, what we're looking at is imagination and cooperation and innovation to make this a certainty for as many parents and children as possible. And I think that's the way we need to start seeing things at this stage.
Okay. Niall Muldoon, Children's Ombudsman, thank you very much indeed for joining us. What do you make of that, Louise O'Reilly of Sinn Féin, that the word discrimination is used against children with special needs, that a plan hasn't been put in place now? Is that a bit too harsh in your opinion?
I don't think so. I think that the time that has been lost for children with special educational needs from school, it's going to take a long time for them to get that to get that progress back. I think a one size fits all approach is not going to work, because not all children are coming from the same place, not all children are coming from the same background, not all children have broadband, not all children have access to a laptop, not all children are going to be able to be facilitated by remote learning. So we've seen the kind of disadvantage that has been perpetuated because of the necessary lockdown. So it's been very, very hard on some families, very, very hard on those families who have children with special educational needs, very, very hard on those families already struggling with disadvantage and socioeconomic exclusion. So we cannot have a one-size-fits-all approach. It has to take account of the real-life experience and the real life that's been lived by these kids. Everybody wants to see the schools reopening in September. I do. My grandson is due to go to school in September. I'm dying to see him in his little uniform going in, but I want to know that it's safe, and I want to know that it can be sustained. So what we don't want to see is the schools opening up without a proper plan in place and then having to shut again if we get a second wave. So we have to be guided by public health advice, but we also have to be cognizant of the fact that not every child is coming from the same place.
Thomas,
not every child has the same advantages, and we are dealing with the fact that we have the largest class sizes in Europe and a shortage of quality qualified teachers. So, you know, it's going to require additional personnel, and there isn't a person in the world that's going to argue that this can be done without additional supports. Those supports have to be put in place, even simple things like we have classrooms and schools where there's no hot water.
And you expect that, I assume.
In 2020, in the there are schools in this state with no hot water.
Do you expect all of those answers, Thomas Byrne, to be answered in the roadmap to be published in 2 weeks' time?
I'm assuming the department is doing a huge amount of work at the moment on this, and they certainly need to be. And can I really just thank the Ombudsman for Children there? I think he set out more eloquently than any of us what children with special needs are going through at the moment and the difficulties and challenges that they face. And what I've asked, and I wrote to the Ombudsman a couple of weeks ago and to the department, I would love to see the Ombudsman for Children in the department with all the education partners, you know, planning all this out as the independent voice of the child. And I think that's absolutely necessary, that the independent voice of the child is heard in this whole debate, because every sector has their own particular interests and needs and responsibilities and worries and concerns. And I think the concerns and worries of the child as well, I think, have to be central to this, because they are really, really serious. And when we talk about blended learning, I don't think we can just throw out phrases like blended learning or online learning with the idea that we have some kind of system in place that does that. We need to knock that on the head.
Yeah.
We don't. It is not the same.
Okay. Can I ask specifically, Kieran O'Donnell, about the charge laid at your door and your government's door by the Children's Ombudsman, that you have discriminated against children with special needs, that their aggression is, the responsibility for that is at your door because you haven't looked at their case quickly enough?
With the containment on the coronavirus and in terms of the public health measures, they impacted more severely on children with special needs. I accept that point. But we had to contain the virus and measures needed to be brought in. We are now, at the moment, the Department of Education are working, and they'll be producing over the next number of days, a specific summer school project over July and August for children with special needs. And furthermore, I take Niall Mundoon's point about that we have to ensure that particular student, type of student with special needs, that they're looked after in terms of the schools reopening as well in a unique way. And that's something I take on board. And I think Niall Mundoon has articulated what are the issues on the ground, and we're dealing with them. But the Taoiseach over the last number of weeks has articulated this particular point about dealing with children and the special needs. And we want to get these summer schools up and running as quickly as possible.
Okay,
and yes, matters happened in terms of containing the virus that did were very, very difficult for parents and children themselves with special needs. I accept that point.
Okay. Catherine says by text, could someone please start talking about humanity? What about all the adults with an intellectual disability having no services and no understanding of what's going on? It's all about hardware and hairdressers, says Catherine. We'll take a very quick break. We'll be back with how, in the name of God's hotels could reopen, and if you could expect any type of a break in a hotel over the next while. And we'll talk about any progress. We'll try and pry some information from the negotiation talks from Thomas Byrne.
Saturday with Cormac O'Hara on RTE Radio 1.
Now, this bank holiday weekend should be one of the busiest times in the year, with people crisscrossing the country going to their favourite location or favourite hotel for a bit of a break. But most of the hotels in the country are closed, their doors are shut. And I assume Elena Fitzgerald Kane of the Irish Hotels Federation, you're the president, that you are pining for phase four and the reopening of hotels in some shape or form. But the restrictions, there will be restrictions, 1 metre or 2 metres or whatever the case may be, and reduced capacity. And doesn't that put a big question mark over the viability of hotels?
I suppose it does. But look, on this bright sunny day, it's the most natural thing in the world to think about, I suppose, our holidays and when we're reopening. And it's that mindset we're taking in terms of the collaborations we've had with Fáilte Ireland in terms of creating operating guidelines for hotels and guest houses to reopen on the 20th of July as part of phase four. And there have been a lot of hotels and their teams involved in it. We've been looking at best practice in hospitality overseas and other sectors. And we have to remember there are also many hotels open right now in terms of, you know, supporting essential services. So there is, I suppose, a very comprehensive set of guidelines been prepared with very much public health as the number one in terms of giving confidence to our guests to book and equally giving confidence to our teams in terms of, you know, working in the new world that will be post-COVID. And a big part of this is it's a living document. So we expect that there will be changes, you know, as we get into stages three, four, five.
What are the changes that you envisage in a hotel stay as of now?
Sure. So I suppose the first thing to say at the outset is this is about hospitality and not a hospital environment. And that's been very much there. in tandem with the whole notion of keeping, you know, public health as number one. So I suppose some of the things we probably think about, we've tried to think through everything from pre-arrival booking, the confidence that you need then, looking at pre-arrival communications, communicating the sense of what might be different, how guests should prepare. You know, it could be as simple as appointing a member of the travelling party to check in. And in some cases, there'll be online check-in, there'll be increased importance for dining, etc. But a big, big thing before I get into kind of the more specifics of the detail is the European Commission published a report earlier this month, and it advocated for that sense of people travelling together. So just, I want to reassure everybody, it's an absolutely reasonable expectation that families and household units can enjoy, you know, time together as part of their holidays, dine together,
swim
together.
What would the hotel experience be like, Elaine? I mean, am I going to be going to the breakfast buffet and someone's going to say to me, do you want one sausage or two through a mask? I mean, that sounds more like a hospital to me than a hotel.
Okay, well, panic not. To go back to what I said, it's about hospitality, not hospitals, and we're not the experts in that field. But as it stands right now, in terms of the guidelines, the only provision for face masks is in terms of spa services. So absolutely, you know, our team members or our guests may choose to wear face masks, but there isn't that. But you're right in terms of breakfast buffets. They will be a lot more limited, or indeed, they may cease to exist. But the great benefit here is you, Cormac, like everybody else, can look forward to having breakfast, I suppose, for the most part, completely served up to you.
In the room.
Absolutely.
Oh, by God.
There you go now. So make sure you get your staycation plans.
When is this on?
Living our best life.
You're giving the politicians hope here. But
we're looking to the politicians for hope.
The spas will be open.
Yes, that's where it is right now. I suppose spas mean different things to different people. So for some people, it's the sense of swimming pools. They'll be opening on the same day as hotels. Again, with social distancing.
How can you social distance when you're rubbing somebody's back?
Sorry, Cormac, could you repeat that there for me?
Well, I never thought I'd ask that question myself either. But how can you social distance if you're giving somebody a back massage?
Well, I suppose, you know, this is where the masks will be a key part, or that there won't be services like sauna, steam room, thermal suite of the past, and that. But it's all very, very calculated. And I suppose, you know, spas, no more than hotels, have had to reinvent themselves, rethink what they're doing. How can they do it in a socially distanced way and in the safest possible way? But I'm very confident in terms of where it's going. It did start almost resembling an ICU ward, and that's the reality. Yeah. But now I feel it's something that's viable. I suppose the big question is if we could get clarity around the phases, you know, things like, small gatherings, large gatherings, filling in the detail, and indeed the 2 metres versus 1 metre ruling.
And what about the 350 payment? There's talk of tapering that or reducing it. Like, is it a case from a hotel's point of view, from a business perspective, in the boardroom, are you saying that if the government doesn't continue with the 350 payment in some shape or form, that it's not viable to hold on to as many staff as you have?
Well, I suppose what I will say to you is what has been a great shining light has been the wage subsidy scheme, the TWSS. I'm a huge advocate of that, and I see that as being critically important when we go into reopening, because many hotels, you know, will be reopening at 30 or 40% capacity, sometimes less. And so what does that mean? Can you only bring back 4 out of every team members? So if I take my own team, we have 200 wonderful people working with us, for some of them for up to 37 years, whole households, multi-generations of family. You know, we want to bring as many people on this journey as we can. You know, this isn't about, I see it being, you know, I heard about the cash tills, et cetera, there in an earlier comment, and I absolutely empathise in terms of, I'm thinking of those grieving, those suffering, this pain of separation, and the amazing frontline workers. But this is about survival. It is not about profits. We are trying to bring as many people back to work as we can, and we need government support. And I see that as probably being the most critical at this point.
But there's a big problem for you. You want the wage subsidy scheme, not the 350, to continue for how long?
For as long as there is social distancing as much as possible. It's that critical. Because Cormac, just to kind of give you a sense of it, I suppose, domestic tourism only accounts for 25% of overall tourism in the past. So we've already lost 75% of that. And whilst I absolutely know that Irish people will don the green jersey and staycation, as they've always done, and think of all the great opportunities. I mean, this is a wonderful, I suppose, island in terms of the country that we have to explore. So it's going back to those nostalgic places of our youth.
So let me put your key question, though, to Kieran. At all. You won't get your back massage in the hotel, Kieran, unless you extend the wage subsidy scheme. Are you willing to do that?
You obviously have a lot more time than myself, Cormac, to be going to. I think it's important that when this you come down and see what the Woodlands in a day are, and you get a far bigger breakfast and 2 sausages.
Well, I suppose they'll only be open, they say, if you extend the wage subsidy scheme. So will I get that chance?
I think everything is geared around getting people back into employment. And the temporary wage subsidy has had a dual role. It has ensured businesses that can stay on in business that they're able to maintain staff. It also means businesses that have had to close because of the pandemic, that they can retain the link with their staff. So when they are able to reopen through the phases, the roadmap, that they can retain those staff. And what we want to ensure is that we get people back into employment as quickly as possible. That's obviously public health permitting. And the supports are there to ensure businesses like Elaine's and others that they can take their employees back. And
she's saying you have to extend that for as long as there is social distancing. Yes or no?
Well, it's currently being looked at by the minister. It's due to, and it will be extended. Obviously, the specific duration and terms of the scheme, that'll be the subject of discussions. But clearly, it has to be maintained after the date to ensure that businesses can come back. And that's the key, folks. Get people back into employment.
What are you in favour of, Thomas Byrne?
Well, what we're in favour of is getting jobs. I mean, as jobs go back and employment goes up, then the subsidy goes down. I mean, that's what's going to have to happen. So we want to see the economy back up. I mean, I think people are entitled to look for, you know, a bit of hope. But, you know, as Christy Moore said, everyone needs a break. I think
so do hotels and employers.
Yeah,
and for as long as there is social distancing and reduced capacity and turnover, that the state should pay a subsidy to employees.
That's why the subsidy is there, because of the reduced turnover. So that's the logic to it. But we want to make sure that we can get the economy back up. That needs a new government. That needs an economic plan, and it needs the health crisis to pass fully. But the truth is, there's tens and thousands and probably more jobs all around the country in the tourism sector. They're absolutely critical. And it's critical that once we're allowed to, and once the movement rules are restricted, that there's no social stigma about going to a hotel in Ireland or to a campsite in Ireland or to wherever you want to go on a vacation this summer, because the jobs are depending on it.
A texter, Elena, says, I rang a hotel about a break. You have to check in and out online. My breakfast would be delivered to my room. The common areas would be closed off, and so will the bar. Not much of a holiday, says that texter. Are you taking bookings now, Elena?
Oh, we are. But I suppose what I will say is, in the absence of the guidelines, there is probably that sense of, well, what is this all going to look like? And I suppose I've been a little bit more lucky insofar as I, together with an extended team of about 50 from the Irish Hotels Federation, we have been in those collaborations. So there's a lot of myth out there in terms of what can and can't be done. But we're really hopeful, you know, as we head towards what has now been pivoted as the Big Friday next week, in terms of, you know, giving us confidence. I mean, that's the reality of it. And can I just say as well about the 2 metre rule?
Quickly,
we are not looking for that now. We are looking for, I suppose, clarity around when it could be potentially reduced and where is the missing detail and the gaps in the roadmap. That is all. Because we're planning now. People are already hugely cash burned. 126 days potentially from a lot of hotels to be closed.
Okay.
You know, you'll be talking about tills ringing, but there's a big hole there. And, you know, it's not saying we leave the hole behind us, but how can we move forward?
Look,
and government support is
critical. Laid out your case very well indeed. President of the Irish Hotels Federation, Elena Fitzgerald Kane, thanks a million for joining us on the programme. The last couple of minutes, Louise O'Reilly, you have your hand up, but I have to prize some information from Thomas Byrne.
Well, I just want to mention the SRI report, Cormac, if I could, because they were very clear. Consumer confidence and spending is falling. So continuing the income supports of Sinn Féin have been advocating, it's not just necessary to protect income, but it's also very, very necessary in terms of our economic recovery. SMEs are the backbone of employment. And I also think for the workers who are returning, to give them the confidence that they need, we need to have the testing, tracing in place. And that needs to be done. That hasn't been done to the correct extent. We absolutely have to have that. And in a time of a public health emergency, and I said this on your programme back in March, sick pay becomes a public health measure. So employers need to understand that their staff have to be able to take time off to isolate and to do the right thing. Nobody should be under the cosh to go into work because they can't afford to take a day off.
I'm glad you mentioned the Fiscal Advisory Report or the ESRI report as well, because they lay out in stark terms the challenges before the next government. Are we going to have a next government? You're part of the Fianna Fáil negotiating team by early next week, Thomas Byrne.
Well, they also lay out in stark terms the need, as Louisa just said, for the payments to continue as a support to the economy and for a sizable fiscal stimulus to help activity. So the Fiscal Council is not just all bad news.
Are you going to be prepared to guarantee those payments, Thomas?
What we are doing now is we want to guarantee the economy, actually, and that's what the payments are doing. because we want to.
So you are going to guarantee the payments. We're calling for the payments to be guaranteed up until December for those people that need it. Not everyone's going to need it.
There may be
in a position to back that call?
There may be some,
because I know workers out there want to hear if you're going to be in a position.
Sorry,
to back
I don't know whether
call.
The payments would have to go beyond December.
Well, forget about the payments. Have you agreed? Have you an agreement on the pension age then? Because I know an awful lot of difficult topics have been left till the very end. Yes or no? Is there an agreement on the pension age?
All I can say is you can read various parties' manifestos on a range of issues, and you can see a lot of commonality on a lot of issues. There are discussions ongoing, and we hope that there would be a programme for government document agreed possibly this week, later in the week.
Is there agreement on the 7%
issue? Come on, Thomas, it's 65, 66 or 67.
I'm not going to comment.
65, 66 or 67.
You can see what Fianna Fáil said in the manifesto. That's a work commitment.
So you're sticking to that 66?
But
are you sticking to 66?
Answer my co-presenter.
Come on, people want to know. Or do you be getting a bill after this? Come on, Thomas. People want to know. 65, 66 or 67.
What we want to do is put in place a government. There's talks, detailed talks going on all of these issues. And what we know, a government. What a government is going to do, actually, is get this economy back on track and, make the changes.
Thomas, come on. Well, what's the Fianna Fáil position? You must have at least one red
Louise,
line.
Louise, you're
go
not
on.
A member of the NUJ. Hang on a second now.
We're certainly not negotiating in public, and we're certainly not negotiating
with
Sinn Féin.
Will we have a deal by early next week?
Well, that's the objective, is to have some sort of an agreement in the latter part of this week. Because the country badly needs a government for all of the issues that have been discussed here today.
Okay, well, look, Thomas Byrne in the fall, Louise O'Reilly of Sinn Féin, Kieran O'Donnell in the city of Limerick, and before that, Elena Fitzgerald Kane, Dr. Niall Muldoon, and Phil Ní Haig. Gene Chachtin Shohogan, Egehean the Chlug, Arrivederci.
And Saturday with Cormac O'Hara was produced by Mary O'Hagan. The broadcast coordinator was Doc Martin. Research was by Kieran Dunn. And sound was by Andrew Kane.